So I'm not sure what's harder about recording a podcast from home. Preventing your dogs from barking or stopping the neighbor from blowing its leaves. I really don't know what is.
What about your husband stomping around on the floor above you?
Yeah, that's a thing too.
Home to stand your ground.
2, 3, 4. Hi, I'm Becca Clegg, and this is the Inner Alchemy Podcast. Join me in conversations with some of my favorite healers and helpers as we explore all the ways we can restore balance within ourselves. The world heals one person at a time, and the healing starts now.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode. This week, we are going to be talking about couples therapy, but not just about couples therapy itself, but how you as an individual can do your own healing by going into therapy with your partner. So I have the honor of having my good friend and hilariously funny Micah Ross on the show this week. Micah is a licensed therapist, relationship coach, speaker, and mom of three, who has dragged couples into better relationships through her private practice, live workshops, and comprehensive and online programs for couples for the last 14 years. She has a not-so-secret mission to help moms say, "Why do I have to tell you what to do? Why can't you just know less in their relationships so they can lead more fulfilled and authentic lives?" We're so glad you're here. Welcome.
Hi, I'm so glad I'm here.
Me too. Well, let's just start out from sort of top down. Couples work. You specialize in doing couples work.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people don't understand couples work and what it really is and what it isn't. So can you just talk a little bit more about what you do as a couples therapist and kind of help people understand what couples therapy is?
Yeah, so I think a lot of people don't maybe necessarily understand fully what individual counseling is, and that's something, you know,
that I'm
trying to help people with on the internet for a long time and in my blogs and on my social media pages. I'm hoping to change people's minds about therapy, but yes, I my specialty is in marriage and family counseling, and I think that there's something really different and special about couples work that I didn't know until I started practicing it. I really didn't intend to be a couples therapist. Mm. So I really got into this work with kids, and then in an internship in school working with kids, I realized that I had a knack for the parents and probably could create more sustainable change by helping the parents fix the system that was creating the kids. It was really frustrating to work with kids and then, get them two steps forward just to send them home to have them take four steps back. So,
yeah.
So interestingly, I've realized since working with people that there's so much, in my opinion, more room or it's more efficient, more room for growth or more efficient growth when I have two people in the room versus one. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's because our issues are not created in a vacuum, but they're also not healed in a vacuum. You know, I can work with somebody individually on liking themselves more, loving themselves more, but then they have to go out into the world and relationally put that into place.
Mm-hmm.
It's all relational to me, whether mm-hmm. we're talking about like relationships with ourselves or with our partners. And so if I work with somebody and I tell people like, I never, we can definitely work on your relationship issues individually. I say that. Mm-hmm. And it will be more efficient if I have both of you in the room.
And I love that idea of it being efficient because I don't work with couples. And so I'm only doing individual work, but I 100% agree with what you're saying about, you know, the work that I do with people, they then go back into whether it's their family or their work environment or whatever system, to use the oh so technical term. And those systems are going to be affected by whatever change. So that's one of the reasons I knew I wanted to have you on the show, Micah, because I really want to, like you, educate people on what therapy is, what it isn't. But also, I think couples therapy or going to see a marital counselor, it has a bad rap because for so many people, it's what you have to do when something gets broken. And I want people to understand, no, it's its own type of, it's its own modality that if you can, you and your partner can do this together, holy cow. I mean, it could just be so healing on so many levels and you don't have to wait for a problem. That it really is like a mode of therapy, a way to both of you and the whole system for that matter, find healing. Yeah.
Right.
How do you think it's different from individual?
Well, let me address something that you just said, which was, you know, that people tend to use it as crisis counseling instead of preventative. And I think that that's, you know, so many people, I think, see couples work as indicating failure. And, you know, I don't wait until my tooth is tremendously painful before I go get my teeth cleaned. And I don't wait until my car is smoking on the side of the road until I get my oil changed. You know, I think that there's, you know, far less impactful things on our well-being and happiness that we are doing an incredible job taking care of and being proactive about. Except for this one thing that a 75-year longitudinal study from Harvard says is the thing that far and away is the most impactful to our well-being and happiness, which is relationships. And in that department, we're all winging it until the crap hits the fan in a major way, or it's like we're going to the divorce lawyer or a marriage therapist.
God, you're so right. Like, and I love the analogy to the car or the tooth because you're so right. We would never do that. Right. We just wouldn't. You know, right. We're so good at being preventative. And yes, like our relationships are everything. So why is it that, and that kind of brings me to my next question, which is what role culture might play in creating imbalances or in the way we look at relationship. What do you see in terms of the norms and the culture and the way that just, you know, it's like I always say, it's like fish swimming in water. We don't know we're in it.
Yeah, right.
But what do you think? What's your thoughts on that?
So after meeting with, and this is probably years into my practice that I noticed this, and not that I wasn't clear about what gender roles were, how impactful they could be. But when I started as a therapist, I was newly married and did not have children. And so I was growing, you know, like all therapists are, you're growing and changing throughout your years of practice, just like your clients are. Mm-hmm. And it was years into my practice where I noticed this theme where I had so many women at a high volume at their male partners saying something to the effect of, why do I have to tell you what to do? Why can't you just know? Mm-hmm. And I think that this is, especially for moms, something that's a sentence that is very relatable. And it highlights for me the differences in what our culture expects of not just men versus women, but I feel like it's extra magnified once we're in the roles of parents and what our culture expects of moms and dads. And so in terms of relationship satisfaction, there is a steep decline once people have children. And I believe that a huge part of that is this kind of cultural BS that we buy into about how to be a good mom versus how to be a good dad. That's I can
huge.
Say so much about
yes.
that. Like, I don't know how much time do we have?
I mean, I'm just listening to you and I'm thinking, you know, I am not a mom. So I do not have that lived experience, but I see tons of people and I've worked with moms for years now. And I'm just nodding my head over here thinking, yes, you know, and dads, I mean, that's the thing. It's not like, oh, one role is getting it worse than the other. It's just, there's so much, to use your word, bullshit around what we think we're supposed to be doing. Right. And yeah, and so I actually would like, you know, when you are helping, let's say a mom, you know, when you're helping a mom try to unpack some of that, what are the things that commonly come up? What are the common expectations, or what is that BS?
Well, I try to really highlight, and I think that, you know, I just see a lot of people's mouths drop when I start to put words around what's happening, which is that our cultural has a huge mountain of expectations for moms, which are often contradictory and impossible to live up to. And then for dads, there's this, like less than a molehill amount of expectations. Like, if my kid goes to school and looks disheveled, who's going to be more judged, me or my husband? For sure, me. My kid's nails are dirty. If they get to practice late, like I imagine my husband like fumbling into practice late and every mom there going, "Oh, Eric, taking the kids to practice."
Yeah.
But me getting some judgment for being late. And so it's like, if I had a job that required travel 4 nights out of every week, people would be like, "What's she doing?" Mm-hmm. A dad has that. And nobody bats an eye. So there's, I think that, you know, there's so much of this that we're so unaware of. And so when I give that like analogy of the mountain versus the molehill, I think that people start to understand more what's happening in their relationship has to do with kind of the shit rolling downhill. So what I mean when I say that is, I remember going to the grocery store with, you know, I had a 5-year-old, a three-year-old, and a newborn strapped to me. And people would say, "Oh, cute baby." Or I would go to the park and people would say, "Oh, cute baby." But my husband would take one baby in a wrap to the grocery store or three kids to the park, and he would get oohed and awed in amazement for being an incredible father. So he would come in to our system, having been out into the world, feeling like, "I am killing it." And I would come back in, like, I would come in from the outside world of Pinterest, of the internet, of social media, of other moms, of everything, of relatives. And I would feel like I'm failing everywhere.
God, that is so good. And one of the things I've always loved, I met Micah years ago and have since followed you and your career and stayed in touch and whatnot, but you're so relatable because you do call it like it is, but you also share your own experiences, I think more than perhaps the average therapist might, although I know that's changing as yeah. we evolve as a field. But, you know, because this is not a us and them kind of thing. This is everybody in this culture is being affected by this. Yes. Like you said, shit's rolling downhill. And so, you know, first of all, the fact that you normalize it, which I think, again, we just need to name it.
Yeah.
I just think it's so needed.
Well, and I think that this ends up translating to a whole lot of men feeling like they can't. And this is the thing. I do a lot. I speak a lot to women on my social media and in my website and on my blog, because they're the ones who are showing up and listening. But I had a client recently who's male that's like, "Why are you always talking to mom? Why don't you get the guy's side too?" And I said, "I do, but you're not on my social media page." Yeah. So I'm not. But what this ends up translating to in relationships is that so many men are feeling like they can never do enough. Like they can't do it right. Like the goalpost is always moving. They can't live up to their wife's standards. They can't make them happy. And women are feeling like they're not enough. They're not a priority. They don't matter. And it's like over the years, all of these puzzle pieces just started coming together. And men are feeling like their wives are critical and naggy. And women are feeling like their husbands are like nincompoops who are incompetent and incapable. I mean, it's like every water cooler discussion between just men or just women, I feel like devolves into this. And so I think that when you kind of take into consideration some outside factors that we're just not conscious of, like you said, we're kind of swimming in this and we don't really know that we're in it, it gets easier to take it less personally and realize, oh, so my husband's not an asshole. There's some other factors at play. Or, oh, my wife's not a nagging bitch. There's some other factors at play. And like, we are seeing this, like we've been raised on two different planets.
Well, I love what you say about being raised on two different planets. I talk a lot about the sort of bifurcation of the yin and yang, or the being and the doing, or the masculine and feminine energies. It's kind of just what I love to write about ad nauseum sometimes.
Yeah.
But I also think that speaks to what you're saying is, you know, the expectations are somewhat split down the middle there. The expectations of one gender versus another. And I also think that we, in a way, we dehumanize one another because we're not really given access to how each parent or each person can and is totally human. You know, it's like the wife has this role, the husband has that role. But if we could slow down and just bring it into our consciousness of like, why do we do that? It's largely because that's the way it was done for us. And that's the way it's always been. And, you know, we have choice here. So I could also talk about this forever because it is, to me, all the more reason why, yeah, you think you're just going to couples therapy, but you're really healing yourself. You know, yep. I mean, there's so much. And do you see that a lot when people come to see you, or they come for couples work, but they end up transformed?
Most people, you say people come for couples work, and that is really cute. But most people come thinking that I'm going to fix their partner.
Really? Oh.
Oh, yeah.
So I've made an assumption already. That's interesting. Oh, that is interesting. So let's go to therapy so my partner will change.
Yes. And I think it's easy. And it took me a long time to really buy into kind of this like systemic perspective that everybody's playing a part in this system. And you can't have one part without the other part, and that, you know, everybody's playing a role. And if I want that person to shift and change, and I also have to shift and change, my reactions have to shift and change, how much energy I give them has to shift and change. So I think that, you know, the vast majority of people really want me to change their partner. And I think that that's just, I think that that's partially just how we're wired. I think it's, you know, when our fight or flight response is triggered, it's just easy to see everybody else's part and what everybody else is doing wrong, and go to that like kind of blame and criticism place. Mm-hmm. So I think just part of it is, you know, it's how we're wired.
Absolutely. Well, and I, you know, I say sometimes, I think most people, when they come to see me or if they go to therapy, they want to feel better. And I get it because I'm part of this culture too. And really part of what we do, we don't really make anyone feel better. We make people better at feeling, which I don't tell people, you know, necessarily off the bat, because I really understand that's the culture. The culture's very linear. It's always about fix it, make it, you know, make it happen, so to speak, when a lot of what we're doing is really not about making anything happen as much as like yielding into the fact that we're humans with really, you know, we're emotional, we're cognitive, we're all the things, and that there's space for all of it. But again, in this culture, that's not the easiest way to to sell something. Is like, we always say as therapists, trust the process. And I'm always like, man, that is not a good selling point. Not an easy, quick thing. So do you see common problems that people face in relationships? Are there themes, or is it all across the board?
I don't know if you feel this way, and this might, like, people listening, this might not be like what everybody wants to hear. But yes, I definitely see themes. I see them so much and so strongly that I told my husband recently, I feel like a large part of my job now is acting. Because you can't just come into a first session and say, oh yeah, I know what your problem is. Here's what's going on. X, Y, and Z, and you have to do A, B, and C. People will be like, I'm going to get out of here.
Yeah.
They have to feel deeply seen. They have to feel deeply seen, deeply heard, deeply understood. But I totally see themes. And I think that, one of the themes that I already identified is, we're in heterosexual relationships where, men are feeling like they can't do enough. They can't do it right. Women are feeling like they're not enough. They're not important and they don't matter. And it's like, and then there's, one of the biggest things though with communication is, everybody knows that communication is important, but I feel like, communication is important, but I feel like so many of us didn't get listening. And that active listening piece is what's missing for so many people. They're doing a fantastic job of saying words, but they're not doing a great job of hearing the other person.
Right. Well, and that's interesting because it kind of leads me to a question that I had, and you may have already answered this sort of just in talking, but is there something that you wish more couples understood? Is there, there's your chance to preach.
Yeah, I think that I wish more couples understood the toxicity of resentment. I think that when I got in, like I said, when I got into this work, I thought it was one thing. And when I started my private practice, I was not necessarily focusing on couples. I would work with couples, but most of my practice was individual. But I think the word has kind of spread over the last 15 years that couples are my thing. I lost my train of thought. I'm preaching about resentment. That's it. Yeah, and I think that over the years, it's become just blatantly obvious that relationships don't just break one day. They break very slowly over a long period of time. It's like I get this visual of like one of those, big nautical ropes with all those different like pieces of twine in there. And to break that, you're not just going to slice it like butter. You're going to hacksaw through every little piece of twine. And I see relationship demise similarly. And I think that one of the things that can erode relationships very slowly over and sneakily and insidiously, like a slow growing cancer, is resentment. And I think that that resentment builds because we're not getting from anger, frustration, irritation to resolution. We're taking detours into shutdown. We're taking detours into escalating arguments and blaming criticism. We might be sweeping it under the rug, placating, not getting it fully resolved. When I say resolution, I mean both people leave the conversation feeling more seen, more heard, more understood, and better. And maybe like you found a win-win solution. I believe that there's always a win-win solution in every interaction. But I think that, especially in my childhood, I didn't know that. I thought you got into arguments and somebody won and somebody lost. Yeah. And I didn't want to be a mean person. So I just got really adept at neglecting and negating my own wants and needs.
Right.
So yeah, that resentment, I think, is.
You just gave such a nice, concise definition of resolution. The next time my husband and I have a conversation, I'm going to remember that. I'm like, that's it. We both leave feeling seen, or I'll have to go back and listen to it. But like that, I mean, I think it's sometimes we aren't taught about conflict. We aren't taught about resolution. I mean, this is just stuff that, me either, Micah. I mean, and I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, not only is resentment so toxic for relationships, but to be in resentment and to hold that energy long term as an individual, it's toxic for the individual. So this it's another example. And if you guys take home anything, it's that when you are doing work with your partner, if you go into therapy with a partner or even a friend. I know business partners that have gone to see couples.
Oh,
therapies.
Yeah.
It's profound how much you as a individual heal because you have to do your own part. Right. And so that is together, and all the therapists out there, if we can change that narrative around, this is something about, fixing what's broken. It's not, it is fun. It can be exciting. it can be a really uplifting, upbeat, positive experience. Therapy itself is that, well, I use all the terms around magic and alchemy because it can be, and all kinds of healing. They aren't necessarily, they can be really hard. Don't get me wrong. It can be really difficult, but the duality is that anything that is that difficult also brings that much joy, right? And on that note, we always sort of close the podcast out by trying to have a little bit of fun and to allow the listeners just to get to know you on a slightly different level by doing rapid fire questions, kind of listening in Brené Brown. She does this. And it was always like my favorite part. I'm like, oh, if I do a podcast, I definitely want to do some rapid fire. So are you game?
Sure.
Absolutely. Okay. So I asked a few people this and it's become one of my favorite questions, but if you could describe your 2020 experience with a bumper sticker, what would it be?
Probably my bumper sticker for everything, which is like feel, deal, then heal.
Feel, deal, then heal. I love that.
Yeah. I think that there's 2020, like especially in the beginning of the pandemic, I remember getting on the internet and I was so busy feeling all the changes and the gravity. Mm-hmm. And I saw so many people just going into like control it mode, like organizing every corner of their house, mm-hmm. like taking on new projects in their home. Like I was like, oh, nobody wants to feel this.
I think I saw you write a book. Did you write a blog post on that?
Yeah, I did. Yeah,
it was good. I remember that one. Yeah. But how common is that? I mean, I know I'm guilty of that a lot.
Oh, I think we all
right
are.
Into that. Yeah. Feel, deal, then heal. Another takeaway, Micah. Thank you. I get so much out of doing these interviews. I'm like, oh, I'm the luckiest girl in the world. So what's the first thing you do when you wake up in the morning? Do you have a first thing?
Yeah, this is not enlightening in any way. I get on my phone and I drink my ridiculously, well, this might be good. I drink my ridiculously high maintenance coffee concoction, but what is it?
Yeah, you're going to have to share that.
Okay. So I love Nespresso with an N, a little Nespresso machine. And I have like, you know, the tiny pod European version, not the big pod American version. And so two pods, coconut cream, not coconut milk, coconut creamer, coconut cream in a can from Trader Joe's. It's organic. Mm-hmm. Make sure you can shake it. Then... 7 drops of liquid stevia.
Oh my gosh.
And a little sprinkle of monk fruit on the top. Like so specific. It's ridiculous. But one of the things I do when I drink my coffee that I think that in our culture, we really miss out on daily rituals. And I realized that when I visited a friend in Spain. And when she was visiting me, she would just like, she thought drive-through coffee places were crazy. She was like, this is crazy. Why is everybody drinking their coffee while they're running? I don't understand. And I was like, I don't understand what you're saying. And she's like, and she would pull a to-go coffee mug out of my cabinet and be like, these do not exist in Spain. And I was like, why? She's like, you are not moving from one room to another or leaving your house with your coffee. Because when you go to Spain and you have a coffee, they sit down and they have a moment with the people in their house, with themselves. And so one of the things I did when I got back from that trip was I got rid of all my to-go coffee mugs.
Really? I'm inspired. Uh-huh. You didn't just take it from like a thought. You took it into action.
And so I think that people make meditating a big deal where it's like we could do these really simple things that add up. That's like, oh, just sit on your behind while you have some coffee.
Yeah. Well, and that I talk all about the being versus the doing and how we need to find some sense of balance between the two. And that really speaks to what I'm talking about, which is, why can't we just be with our coffee and take a minute and then go do what, you know, and I am as guilty. I talk about this stuff because I see it so much in my own life and feel the imbalance in my own life. So there's no preaching coming from over here. It's just an awareness that fish swimming in the water of our culture. Like, if we don't bring this stuff into awareness and then, like you, actually do something about it and get rid of the travel cups, then we're at the behest of this, you know, rat race that is just going to run us over.
Right.
So I love that. And I love that you go right down to the monk fruit. Like, you know, the details of it. It's beautiful. It really is. So we're going to close out with the question I ask everybody. And that is, one piece of advice you would give to your 14-year-old self.
I have so many.
Yeah, right. I know. It's hard to pick.
You know, but I would this is maybe not a piece of advice, but my parents were not, they were not totally functional. And there was, you know, maybe a type 2 personality disorder in there. Mm-hmm. And I wish somebody would have told me the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily given me advice, but I wish somebody would have told me the truth about that. And I feel like people were so busy being polite and thinking that they were protecting me.
Mm-hmm.
But, and you know, I'm all for, you know, when I work with parents going through divorce or separation, I'm all for, you know, not talking about the other parent. But when I do feel like there is an exception to the rule when there is a type 2 personality disorder, like narcissism or borderline personality disorder, because you have to play a really different game with that person.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, you can't win.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you're in relationship with people like that, it's really easy to think there's something wrong with me.
Yeah.
Something it can be crazy making. And so, I wish somebody would have told me the truth.
Yeah. Well, no, that's incredibly impactful. And I think this idea of understanding that if you're telling somebody about an illness or a mental illness, you're not insulting them. But, you know, so by saying your parent has this mental illness, it isn't shit talking the parent. It's education. And I think that goes to like the stigma around mental illness and what it means. But like, that's not shit talking. That is objectively explaining the reality for the child. So, and I hear you about the crazy making. Yeah. The internalizing. That is really good advice.
Yeah. Well, it's like they're playing a game and somebody is giving them the rules.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, these are the rules?
Yes.
This is what this person is capable of?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Well, and our recent, you know, I'm not going to get overly political in this podcast, but our recent situation with recent people in powerful positions has shown that, you know, if you assume somebody is going to play from the same set of rules as quote unquote everybody, you're at, you know, it's like you're being taken out without any defense, without any armor, without, you know, you really are subject to getting very, very hurt by that. So anyway, I could digress on that for hours, but I will not. I will actually open the floor for you to tell us all about what you're doing in the world. And I know the audience is probably resonating with a lot of what you're saying. So how do people find you and what do you have going on these days?
Well, probably the most fun place to find me is on Instagram right now. / Mika Ross, MIKARoss. I have a full practice. I'm not taking new clients, but I do have online courses and workshops. And so I have a really simple, straightforward, although I did put a ton of time and effort into the sequencing, course for couples that is a conflict course. And that's at MikaRoss.com/conflict. And then I have a free training for busy couples as well. That's just at /training.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we talked a bit about like moms and culture. I do a something that I call Well Mama. I used to do it live before the pandemic. And then realizing the pandemic that moms are really being disproportionately impacted by the pandemic. I've heard a lot of women say my life has changed a ton and my husband's hasn't changed at all. Mm-hmm. And so we started doing Well Mama Virtual, which is a workshop for moms that they get immediate access to. And then they also get to be part of our Well Mama Facebook community. And so it's a lot of fun. We have moms groups. We do workshops over 6 weeks. And our next one's coming up in April, but we've got a wait list for that at MicahRoss.com/WellMama. So I got a lot going on.
You guys go and follow Micah on Instagram. You are a hoot, and it's one of my favorite Instagram accounts. You're just, like I said, extremely personable, and there's always great stuff to learn while you're
Becca, did you see my new Karen wig?
I saw your Karen wig. Yes, that's what I was thinking of. I was like, only Micah. Anyway, you all go head over to Micah's Instagram account and see what we are talking about. Micah has her own Karen wig, and it's amazing.
I'm going to be using it in communication videos. Because we don't want to communicate like a Karen. That's my new thing.
And again, all the more reason why I love you. And I'm so glad we got to catch up. And thank you for being with us and for sharing what you do in the world. It is very, very needed. But we loved having you on and just can't thank you enough.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, in closing, I want to go ahead and remind you of three things you can do if you should so choose. Number one is subscribe to this podcast. That way you can be in the know about all the new episodes we release as we release them. Number two is give this podcast a 5-star review if you like the episode and you feel we earned it. Our goal is to bring these conversations about emotional health and healing to more and more people, so we could use your help in telling more and more people about the show. And number three is do yourself a favor. Head over to my website, RebeccaClegg.com, and download the free ebook all about finding and reclaiming balance. In this world and in these times, I don't know anybody that couldn't use some pointers on that. And as always, a huge thank you to Dawn and Claire, better known as the Ormwoods, for donating their single, Hope Pray Sing, as the soundtrack for the Inner Alchemy podcast. You can check out their music and videos at their website, theormwoods.com.